There is so much to say in Parshas Baloscha. It's really such a filled Parsha. In fact, it even contains perhaps a whole Sefer in of itself. And even just to focus on the fourth Aliyah, as is our task this year, there is so much to say, and we won't be able to do it justice. We'll have to hope that in future years we'll be able to fill it in. But just to try to highlight some of the very, very important themes that come up in this Aliyah. And just to look at the first word of the fourth Aliyah here in Parak Tes, Pasuk Tes Vav, Uviyom Hakim Es HaMishkan. So here the Vav, the first letter, Rav Shlomo Shmuel Fall Hirsch, focuses on that to comment that there's a connection to the part before about the Karban Pesach and the whole notion of the Pesach, that here this is a reference to the idea of Bnei Yisrael as the flock of Hashem. And now we are going to talk about how we travel by the word of Hashem, and that is going to be a very, very crucial theme, as we'll see in a moment. But this idea of the daytime would be Yom Hikim Es HaMishkan. So that has a significance that we will comment in a second. There is a surprising comment in the Zohar which connects this to the Pasuk in Tehillim of Pezer Nosom Avyonim, the idea of giving a lot to tzedakah. And there is a beautiful drasha from Rav Teichtal. It was printed in Sefer Mishneh Sachar al HaTorah, where he raises the question of what does this idea of giving a lot of tzedakah have to do with the pasuk of Yom Hakim Es HaMishkan. And he expounds upon this to note, he has a drasha on the concept of Harachman Hayokim Lanu Sukkos David Hanofelas, and we talk about the sukkah falling in the present tense, and that's itself noteworthy. Why don't we talk about the past tense, that the sukkah has fallen? Why do we talk about the sukkah falling? And he notes there that we have bitachon that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to save us, but we ask that he should save us before we have fallen all the way to the ground, while we're still falling, while it's still in the present tense, that the Yeshua should come earlier. And he says, in that sense, we say, Gedola tztaka shemekareves es ha-geula, davka mekareves es ha-geula, that we want that the geula should come earlier before we have fallen all the way down. It should come sooner. So the idea of tztaka, we know that the Torah emphasizes specifically that we should try to help when somebody is in financial dire straits before they totally collapse, hiyamot, before they totally stumble. So that's the whole chap of tztaka, that we should help them before they are in such terrible situation, while they are falling and before they have fallen. And that's what we mean. We say, yakum lanu v'sekosav et hanai feles. So here also there is a theme of Uviyom Hikim Es HaMishkan, that we want to lift up the Mishkan, we want to keep it from falling, so better to do that during the day rather than the night. So that's a beautiful drasha. I wonder if you could maybe connect this also to a din that maybe Rav Teichtal would appreciate. So there is also a din that the Chazal learned from this pasuk. The Gemara Maseches Shavuos and Daf Tezvav tells us that Ein Bonin Binyan Beis HaMikdash Balayla, that we can't build a Beis HaMikdash at night. And nonetheless, as Menachas Chinah points out, that seems to be that that's not actually a psul, that there's a ikuv, that we're not supposed to build a Beis HaMikdash at night, but apparently it's not a psul, because there is a tradition that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring the third Beis HaMikdash without our actual efforts. And that's one possibility, how the Gemara considers. The Gemara tells us that we have to have a prohibition of not eating charash on the second day of Pesach, even though otherwise it would have been mutter, but we have to worry that maybe the Beis HaMikdash will be built suddenly and we won't be prepared for the din, that we have to bring the carbon first, meher yipana HaMikdash, and apparently the concern is it'll happen so suddenly, maybe it'll be built the night before or on Yontif, when we're also not supposed to build the Beis HaMikdash. So even though those are times when we're stopped from doing it, but apparently it's possible that it could happen on the day of Kadosh Baruch Hu, so you see here that it's not a puzzle based on Mikdash. This is something Mikdash David discusses and others discuss, that even if it's something we're not supposed to do, but if it happens, it's not a psul. So maybe there is a notion there of the whole tzura of the geula, that there's a lechadchila way to do it, but sometimes there may be a need for it to happen in ways that are necessary because of the moment, and that's not necessarily ideal, but we still recognize that opportunity. And Rav Teichtel himself became well-known after the Tshuvas Mishnah Sacher, but he became well-known for writing Havarim Smecha. He was originally an anti-Zionist, and he was lost in the Holocaust, unfortunately, but he became a big author of a very important Zionist work. So perhaps the recognition that there is an ideal way to build a Beis HaMikdash, but maybe then there's also a recognition that we have to also take what opportunities we have, and that that also may be a way to be making the Mikdash, and that that also could end up being valid and necessary, and that's also what we have to hold on to, rather than letting things collapse completely, and that that is also a part of the Kadosh Baruch Hu's message. So that is maybe perhaps a drasha he may appreciate. So related to that, and related to the whole notion of Galus and Geula, is a very crucial theme that we have in these psukim. And the psukim tell us here, repeatedly, that here we have the Anan telling us where to go, and the Psukim have a language here, the Pasuk Yud Ches, L'Pi Hashem Yusuf Bnei Yisrael, L'Pi Hashem Yachanu. And this language, which appears again in Pasuk Chaf, L'Pi Hashem Yachanu, L'Pi Hashem Yisrael, so all of this instruction that we would have, that we would travel based on Hashem's direction, we would camp and we would move based on Hashem's direction. And the Ramban emphasizes that the Jews were not given any indication of how long each rest period would be. Whenever the cloud would give them the signal to encamp, so then they would have to make all the arrangements for an extended encampment. And it could be that in a few hours they would have to break camp and follow the movement of the cloud. And Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch has a comment over here, and many pick up on this kind of idea, that this is the teaching of the journey throughout the wilderness that we learned for all of time, that we have to follow God's guidance with devotion and trust, no matter how incomprehensible it may seem, that sometimes He'll instruct us to leave what we've just begun to love, and sometimes He requires us to stay in a situation that's undesirable. And still we have to accept that and fulfill it with joy, whatever He commands us, and to recognize that that's the nisayon of the moment, to recognize that that's how He is testing us. And it's not just about the journey, and this is something that Rav Hirsch emphasizes, that it's not the duration of the journey that's described here, but it's the prolonged waiting that is mentioned several times. He says the particular stress is placed on Israel's endurance and patience. And if we consider the fact that the Jews were not yet condemned to 40 years of wandering, they were fully aware that their destination was beyond it, and every stop just kept them from their promised destination. But through these exercises, the people acquired the virtue of quiet, serene resignation and trusting patience. And this is an idea that many have picked up on. Rucham Lavavitz and his sichos would talk about how this is a mitzvah ledoros. The Shla would write about how this is why we should say Yemirtz Hashem in all things, because it's all Al Pi Hashem, that our moving and our stopping and our camping and our traveling is all Al Pi Hashem. There's a beautiful sefer called L'Chai Roi, where he has many quotations from many different svarim about how part of the message here is that we can never blame the place that we're in for our problems, and that we recognize that every place brings with it its own nisayon and its own challenges and its own opportunities. And wherever we are meant to be, that is where we are. Wherever HaKadosh Baruch Hu is guiding us, it's because Al Pi Hashem Yachnu, Al Pi Hashem Yisau, and the waiting is just as much rest in Hashem as the traveling. And among these sources of quotes, the Chafetz Chaim's comment in Parsha Shmos, that God tells Moshe, HaMokum HaShirata Omer Alav Admas Kodeshu, wherever you're standing, that's Admas Kodesh, that's where your opportunity lies, that's where your Nisoyan is. And it's also very fascinating that we find this has nafkaminas. If I remember correctly, Rav Huttner has in one of his drushes in the Pachad Yitzchak on Shabbos, that there's a din in Hilchos Shabbos, that you're a putter if you carry something too small, outside on Shabbos, a hotzah has a shear, and if it's too small, you're putter. And even if it's inside something that's very large, you're still putter because the container is butthole to the object. And he has a whole sikha about how Shabbos represents the emes. So since this is all in service of the smaller thing, so the emes is defined by the smaller thing, and that's the whole yesod of Shabbos. So here you'll find also the Gemara, both the Bavli and the Rishalmi, have a fascinating dinim that are derived from this concept specifically of Al Pi Hashem. So, for example, the Bavli in Shabbos and Daf Lamed Aleph Mebeis talks about how all the malachos are learned from the Mishkan. So when it comes to Soser, so if you destroy something, so that's really a destructive act, but it's considered to be a constructive malacha because it's almanas livnos. So normally it's only going to be constructive if you're knocking something down to rebuild it specifically bimkomo, to rebuild it in its place. So, but then the Gemara says, but that we learn from the Mishkan, and the Mishkan was taken down to be rebuilt somewhere else. So it was not Davka Bimkomo. So how could we learn from the Mishkan when that wasn't the standard? And Rabbi Yossi replies there, no, that's because that was Al Pi Hashem. So wherever Hashem said to rebuild it, that was considered to be Bimkomo, as if it was in the same place. So nowadays, for Hilchos Shabbos, the rebuilding would have to be in the same place, but the definition is guided by wherever Hashem tells us to do, that we see in the Mishkan, because that was the essence of the place, that was the essence of the truth, and perhaps that's in line of what Rav Huttner wrote there, that the Melachos of Shabbos represent the actual truth. Similarly, the Yerushalmi also has it in the 15th parak of Shabbos, also quoting Rav Yossi, that the question of whether a binyan l'shah is considered to be a binyan on Shabbos, so can we derive from the Mishkan that since that was a temporary binyan, so maybe that should show you that is considered to be a binyan. Rav Yossi says no, that there that was defined based on whatever Hashem said, so that's a different story. So this whole notion of Al Pi Hashem Yachnu, so this is a very, very crucial idea, Al Pi Derech HaMusar, and perhaps as a mitzvah l'doros to recognize that that was the Ikar Nisayon of that time in the Midbar, and that we take that with us throughout all of our challenges, and that this is a major message for us to learn from. It's also quite fascinating. Perhaps we could also note that we have a somewhat strange practice. Now, to look a little bit further, so we see Pasuk Chav Gimel, so we have a phrase here also that may seem perhaps a little bit too familiar. So what you call the Mandela effect, I think something that seems familiar is actually not as it actually seems. So Pasuk says, Al Pi Hashem Yachanu, once again, the Al Pi Hashem Yisoh, again you hear that phrase, Es Mishmeres Hashem Shamaru, Al Pi Hashem Biad Moshe. So that phrase, Al Pi Hashem Biad Moshe, we know we say that when we put away the Sefer Torah. But there we have a mixture of psukim, because we have a pasuk from Parshas Yeschanan, we say, Zos HaTorah Asher Sam Moshe Lifnei Bnei Yisrael, and then we add to it, Al Pi Hashem Biad Moshe. So we combine two parts of psukim, so it's very unclear why that is. There's a lot of discussion in Svarim as to why we mysteriously have this practice of combining two parts of psukim. And I thought maybe you could suggest that maybe there is somewhat of a theme. The first of all, the whole phrasing there in Veschanan of Zos HaTorah is also a little hard to understand. There it's in the context of Moshe separating the Ari Miklat, and why that is highlighted as Zos HaTorah itself is worthy of attention. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a comment there that was Moshe Rabbeinu trying to do a little bit of a mitzvah that wasn't yet in its full obligation. He wasn't going to fulfill the mitzvah completely. This was being set aside for the future of the Ari Miklat that would be relevant later in Eretz Yisrael, and it was an example of Moshe's Avas Hashem and Avas HaTorah to want to have some involvement in a mitzvah that wouldn't really be fulfilled, that wasn't obligatory. Zos HaTorah, that's the whole essence of the Torah. So there you have this mutual relationship, that is the Jew showing he wants to be with God, whether there's an actual commandment, whether there's an actual Kiyam mitzvah or not, and God is with us, Al Pi Hashem Yad Moshe, that we see here, that constant presence goes in both directions, that we seek to be with him and he is with us constantly, and that is the whole Torah, and that is what we say as we escort the Torah. We recognize that mutual relationship and just how powerful that is. So just to skip ahead a little bit, so now we have Perek Yud within this Aliyah also, and we have the mitzvah of the Chatzosros, of these trumpets that were blown. Rav Hirsch, with his always fascinating and biological discussions. So he understands that Chatzotros is from the Lashon of Chatzer, from the language that we have of a courtyard and the center of a area. So just like that's what a Chatzer is. So the Chatzotros, when they're blown, it attracts attention, and that makes someone the center of attention, just like a chatzer. So we find that the description here is that they're blown three times in three different contexts, when to gather the people to move, and also at a time of tsar or mulchama, and the opposite also at a time of simcha or bringing a karban. And the Rambam counts all of that as one mitzvah sein nun tes. Tashbetz also counts it like that, and others count it differently. So the Rabbi count two mitzvahs, count a mitzvah at a time of tzara and a time of simcha, which maybe is a little more understandable. Those would seem to be different things. The smag counts it only in the context of the karban, and the Sefer Mayan HaChachma explains that that's its own kind of concept, while the mocham idea maybe isn't really a mitzvah, it's more of a skula. So the Rambam taka is a little bit surprising. In Maka Mishnah, in the beginning of Hilchos Tainis, and also the Parashas Drachim, they note that it is hard to understand why the Rambam is combining different kinds of ideas here. The Prima Gadim in the Mishpat Osav and Archaim in Tavkov Ayin Hey quotes from the Sefer Achinuch, or based on the Sefer Achinuch, that it's all one idea, that it's all about focus, and that it's there to direct our attention. So therefore, maybe it's all a common idea. Rav Asher Weiss thought similarly but differently, that the Pasuk says it's Lahalos Ikaron, that it's all there to give us a special reference in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that's perhaps the idea in different settings. It's all one concept that's applied in different settings. But as he notes there also, it's taka question. So why don't we find that we have this applied of Bizman Hazah? The Magen Avraham raises this question that we should have a base tzara. We should have an obligation to blow chatzotros. Nowadays, it's a mitzvah min haTorah. It's not clear that there is a very strict requirement for how they're made. So if we have an esar nowadays, we should have an obligation to blow the chatzotros. So how come we don't do that? And some suggest it's got to be the Afkan esar for all of Klal Yisrael. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva in Aruch Chaim, in Chelek Aleph, in Siman and Kof Pei Tes, that maybe a davka has to be the same ones that were used for their karbanos. So if we don't have the karbanos, so then maybe we can't have the chatzotros in other contexts. Rav Asher Weiss thought that maybe that's the best answer we have, because otherwise it's not a good question. If we don't seem to have a better answer, so maybe that's the best we can work with. And we'll just mention one other idea here, that there is a drasha in the Sifrei that has attracted a lot of attention, that in reference to these different usages of the chatzotros. So the pasuk here, the last pasuk in the Aliyah, says, "V'yom simchaschem o'adeichem v'rashi chatzeichem v'sakatem b'chatzotros al'oseichem al'zivchei shalmeichem v'hayu lachem l'zikaron l'fnei elokeichem ani Hashem elokeichem." So here, Yom Simchaschem, these different words, so there are different versions of what to learn out of these words, but the Sifrei has a drasha that Yom Simchaschem, that is a reference to Shavasos. So that is surprising, because if the suggestion here is that Simcha is a reference to Shabbos, so the common assumption is that Shabbos is not a time of Simcha specifically, that Simcha is a time that is a Simcha is associated with Yontif. We know that Yontif, there is a mitzvah, Samachta B'chagecha. And that Shabbos, we don't have a explicit obligation of Simcha. We have Zechira and Shmira mentioned in the Chumash, and Medivrei Kabbalah, the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, tells us there's an obligation of Kavod and Oneg, but we don't find Simcha, and that's the general assumption that there are nafkaminas, various nafkaminas that come up in Shas, Leinyan Avelus, Leinyan more obscure things such as Arias Negayim, the issue of getting married. We assume there's an Issur min haTorah to get married on Yontif, even on Chol HaMoed, because of the problem of Eim Arvin Simcha B'Simcha. Chazal derived that from a pasuk, that's an Issur Daraisa. And on Shabbos, we generally assume that actually it's not an Issur Daraisa, It's the Nisa Drabana Mishum Kinyanim. The Rama writes that B'Shasat Chag Gadol, one could conduct a wedding on Shabbos, Makom Kavod Abrias, Makom B'Shasat Chag, because it's only Nisa Drabana. He actually writes in his Chuvas that he did this once in a situation with a Yosoma that he considered to be a big crisis, that was supposed to be a Friday wedding that ran into a Saturday night, and that was a reflection of the fact that it's an Issa Drabanan, because we don't have a Chiyuv Simcha on Shabbos. That's how it's generally assumed. So most of the Makoros do sound like that. The Bechor Shor is often quoted as emphasizing this. The Rav Alexander Shor, in his commentary to Maseches Tainis on Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, is explaining the din that when you have Shabbos, let's say Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, so there are those who are machmir not to learn even on Shabbos. And because of the prohibition of Simcha, they're assuming that applies even on Shabbos. So the question is that we do assume that we can have meat on Shabbos. So explain, even on Shabbos during the 9 days, even on Shabbos that would otherwise be Tisha B'Av. So the explanation is that yes, that's because there is a concept of Oneg Shabbos that requires us to have a Suda, and that perhaps requires us to have a Suda with meat, maybe. But that's different from the Din of Simcha. There's a distinction between Oneg and Simcha. So perhaps Yantif has Simcha, and maybe not Oneg. I've discussed in the past that that's a question. There are a few Sfarim titles that may not exist, so one of them is the Oneg Yantif. It's a little bit questionable whether there's a concept of Oneg Yantif, just as it's questionable whether there's a concept of Oneg Shabbos, of Simcha B'Shabbos, rather. So that's what the Bechor Shor maintains, that the two separate concepts. So on Yantif, you have Oneg, and on Shabbos, you have Simcha, and they are two, sorry, that on Yontif you have Simcha, on Shabbos you have Oneg, they're two separate ideas, and they don't mix, they don't have the same jurisdictions. So that's how many do seem to take it, that Shabbos doesn't have a Chiyuv Simcha. So this drasha, they find difficult. The other source in Chazal that seems to support this is the Yerushalmi that talks about Purim. If Purim falls out on Shabbos, which it could do in Yerushalayim, so if the 14th of Adar doesn't fall out on Shabbos in our calendars, but the 15th of Adar could, so the question of how to assign the different mitzvos of Purim, if they fall out on Shabbos, the Yerushalmi says that we should not have the Suda of Purim on Shabbos, because the Asiyas Simcha that the Megillah requires, the special Suda they're supposed to have for Purim, we should make the Suda, and not on a day that the Simcha is Asiyasu B'dei Shamayim. So it sounds like from there that perhaps there is a Simcha that Shabbos has, indeed, that it is associated with it. So there is somewhat of a question as to whether there is a concept of Simcha on Shabbos, some conflicting sources, and the Sefer Tari Tamima in the Chumash and Bereshis and Parak Beis. So there in the comment Hey in Parak Beis, the Tari Tamima has a long comment there where he's very sure that there is a Simcha on Shabbos, and he quotes the Bechor Shor to disagree with him. He thinks there absolutely is Simcha, and the fact that we talk about Oneg is not a contradiction. That's just to add Oneg onto Simcha. He is quite emphatic about this. He thinks there absolutely is a Simcha on Shabbos. So Pashtus, the resolution, probably is like the Paris Yosef HaChadosh discusses. The Paris Yosef HaChadosh has many, many Makaris about this, and he discusses, which is probably the most likely approach here, that you can distinguish between a Chiyuv of Simcha in the Halachic sense, which has certain requirements and certain nafkaminas, and the Metzias of Simcha. So Shabbos has a essence of Simcha, it has the mitzvah of Simcha that affects certain things, and that has a character to it, so that makes a difference, and there are nafkaminas in both ways. So one way of illustrating the distinction, so we said before that we don't have an Issa D'Oraisa to get married on Shabbos, that would connect to the Chi of Simcha, although, as he notes, there is a minority opinion against this. The Shita Mekubetzis and Ksuvis quotes a view that we're not allowed to get married on Shabbos because of a Chi of Simcha. But there's also citation there also in the Rishonim and Ksuvis that we maybe do assume, which maybe does reflect this other angle to it, that we assume that Shabbos counts as Panim Chadashos. So we know that for Sheva Brachos, if you want to recite the Sheva Brachos at a gathering after a wedding, so normally you have to have somebody new at the gathering, you have to have Panim Chadashos. But if the gathering is happening on Shabbos, so then some of the Rishonim assume that Shabbos itself counts as Panim Chadashos, because the whole notion is that the Panim Chadashos have to be there in order to add an extra element of simcha that wasn't at the wedding. If we want to make these brachos, we need to have an extra aspect of simcha, so the extra guests add that, and Shabbos is also able to add that. So we can have a gathering on Shabbos without any new guests, and we can make the Shabbat brachos because of that. So that reflects this idea that there is an enhancement of simcha on Shabbos. Shabbos has a reality of simcha. It doesn't necessarily have the chi of simcha in the same way Yontif does, the mitzvos of simcha, that has not Kaminas in those directions, but it has a reality of simcha, and that has its own concept and its own impact, and that's one more reflection of the notion that we've seen throughout this Aliyah, that every situation and every occasion has its own elements to it, its own aspects to it, and presents us with its own set of opportunities and challenges for us to make the best of, and sometimes it's more apparent, sometimes it's less apparent, but Shabbos brings with it many wonderful opportunities, including a reality of simcha. Whether or not that manifests itself as a specific mitzvah, it certainly expresses itself as a reality that can inspire and elevate us. And on that note, I wish all of you a tremendously happy Shabbos.